Welcome everyone to the Bereans Bible Institute. I'm Tim Warner, your teacher. We are in module number 11, going verse by verse through the book of Revelation. This is lesson number 44. We have been going through Revelation chapter 17 in the last few lessons. The last time we talked about verses 9 through 11. I want to read that briefly because we're going to continue in that section today and hopefully beyond. Here is the mind having wisdom. The seven heads are seven hills. There the woman is seated on them. There are also seven kings. Five have fallen, one is, and the other has not yet come. And whenever he should come, he must continue briefly. And the beast that used to be and is not now also is the eighth and is from the seven and is going to destruction. Now we talked about the previous verses describe up through verse 8 describes what was going on in the, let's call it the spiritual realm, where Satan is identified as the great red dragon. And then beginning in verses 9 through 11, we have a description of what goes on in the physical realm, which is an outgrowth of that spiritual realm. That is Satan's activity. We can't see his activity personally, but we can see the manifestations of it when he uses humans to do his bidding. And we see here that it says, let me read this, verse 9, it says, here is the mind having wisdom, the seven heads are seven hills, there the woman is seated on them, there are also seven kings, five have fallen, one is, the other has not yet come, whenever he should come, he must continue briefly. The beast that used to be and is not now is the eighth and is from the seven. So we see that there are seven kings. Now a king is a reference to a human ruler. And we saw last time that the word king, as it's used in Daniel, especially with regard to these successive kingdoms in Daniel, that word not only refers to an individual man, but it refers to his dominion, that is the authority that he exercises, which can flow to even to his successors. So, like the king of Babylon in Daniel chapter 2, you know, when Daniel says to Nebuchadnezzar, you are the head of gold, it's not only Nebuchadnezzar, it's the Babylonian Empire, which followed, continued after Nebuchadnezzar's death through his son and then his grandson. And then it was overthrown by the Persians and Cyrus and so forth, okay? So anyway, we saw all that last week. So the kings do not have to be specifically individual men, though they usually start with an individual man that Satan chooses to use manifest the kingdom of darkness and to exercise dominion through that puppet, if you will. All right, so it says that five of them had fallen, the other has, one is, and the other has not yet come. Now, this is an important statement because it tells us it sort of places John where, when it says one is, it places him in that timeline, five being prior to John, one being during John's lifetime, and the other still being in the future. So we have to look at this from John's perspective. Last time we also talked about what I believe those five previous kings were. And let me go over them again briefly. We're not going to spend much time on them. We did that in the last lesson. But the first, I believe, is when Satan first manifested his head, if you will, through human rulers. Now, Satan deceived Eve and then Adam, and because of that, Adam abdicated his dominion over the earth, and Satan received that dominion. as he said to Jesus when he tempted him, that you know all the kingdoms of the earth had been delivered to him, and he could give them to whomever he willed. So Adam ruled. Satan ruled through men. How did he do that? Well, we saw that Cain had a son, called him Enoch, and he built a city and named it after the name of his son. And we saw that building a city, it's mentioned several times in the Old Testament scriptures, but it is in reference to rulers who had dominion over people. and they use slave labor or they use their subjects to build these cities, and they ruled over those cities. So we see clearly that Cain was a ruler. And, you know, in 1 John it says that Cain was of the wicked one, that is, of Satan. All right, so that was the first one. The second one was Nimrod. After the flood, God destroyed Cain's dominion when he brought the flood, and just because the earth was all filled with violence and so forth. So God overturned that, and then after the flood, the sons of Noah began to procreate and so forth, and then we had Nimrod was born, and he was, it says, the beginning of his kingdom was Babel. That's the Tower of Babel. And the we saw that Nimrod was introduced pagan worship. They built the tower in order to try to overthrow God, just in the same way that Satan has always tried to overthrow God and so forth. And God brought that kingdom to destruction by confounding the languages. Well, then the third one we saw was that Satan ruled through Pharaoh in Egypt, and God had to intervene with the 10 plagues in order to overthrow Pharaoh and his kingdom. You can clearly see in these examples that these were rulers that were fighting against God himself, and God intervened on behalf of his people. Well, then we saw that the fourth one was the kingdom of Tyre. We looked at Ezekiel there, the passage that talks about the king of Tyre and that how he was in Eden, the garden of God, and that he was the anointed cherub who covered, and he was perfect until iniquity was found in him and all that. So that was the fall of Satan in the Garden of Eden. But it's clear that it's addressed to the king of Tyre, and the surrounding context talks about the contemporary situation that Ezekiel was prophesying about with regard to the king of Tyre and how Nebuchadnezzar was going to overthrow him, but yet places him in Eden. Well, it's clear that what's happening here is these particular rulers are simply puppets for Satan. Okay, and so the scripture addresses the ruler, that king, and Satan, who is his puppet master, as though they're one and the same person. The fifth one we saw was Antiochus Epiphanes, and scripture talks about him, Antiochus, committing the abomination of desolation, using the same terminology with regard to the Antichrist, and the end times will commit the abomination of desolation. So it's pretty clear. You all probably know the story of Antiochus and how he attempted to get the Jews to abandon God and abandon his law and to worship the Greek gods. He claimed to be God manifest, which is what his name Epiphanes that he took means, and so forth. All right, so those are the five that have fallen, in my opinion. He said, and one now is, according to verse 11. He said, one now is. Well, obviously, that would have to be Rome, because John wrote the book of Revelation during really the height of the Roman Empire. And the Roman Empire was characterized by some very evil and wicked men that were really all inspired by Satan himself. And you don't need to look much farther than the birth account of Jesus Christ in Matthew to see that, where Herod was, when he heard from the wise men that the Messiah was born, the king of the Jews, that he set out to kill all the children 2 years and younger in order to kill the Messiah. Obviously that was demonic, but we see a lot of demonic activity in the Roman Empire as well, in other rulers, some of the emperors. Nero was the one who instigated severe persecution of the Christians. He's the guy that, had Christians burned to light his way to the Colosseum He used the torture of Christians as entertainment for the crowds. You can see this definitely satanic activity in the Roman Empire. There's no question about that. And when John wrote the book Revelation, Domitian was the emperor at the time, and he was almost as brutal as Nero was with regard to the Christians. He persecuted them mercilessly, and that was he was the reason why John was on the island of Patmos to begin with. All right, so we see there's no doubt that the one who is the sixth head of Satan's kingdom of darkness was the old Roman Empire as the enemy of God. Now, from what's interesting is from AD 325, when Constantine became the emperor, Constantine brought an end to the persecution of Christians, at least those who would side with him. Constantine sort of inserted himself into Christian affairs, and he seduced many of the church officials, and because of that, he polluted the Roman church. Really, the Roman church and the Roman government sort of became one and the same there. And after the fall of political Rome, which took place not long after that, we see that Rome continued to exert an enormous amount of power and dominion, but now it's doing it through Roman Catholicism and through the popes and through religious control of the people. And so there was a radical change. Even though it's still Rome, it's a radical change in the dominion there. All right, we'll talk a little bit more about that as we move on. Now let's talk about the one thing about Rome that's Mystery Babylon. As we continue reading in chapter 18, you will see that the seven heads here are seven kings, but when we get to chapter 18 and it talks about Mystery Babylon, it says that she is a queen, and she has her own dominion. And this is exactly what we see happen to Rome, that the political Rome fell, and now the Roman Catholicism has taken its place. It uses the authority that it gained from the old Roman Empire, but now it claims to be the one true Christian church, and she turned into a prostitute very quickly, as we've talked about before. Okay. Anyway, let's talk about the seventh kingdom. Now, we don't have a lot of information given us about the seventh one, but there's a very important statement that's made here in verse 10, and I want to read this to you again. All right, it says, there are seven kings, five have fallen, one is, the other has not yet come, and whenever he should come, he must continue briefly. Now, there have been a lot of speculations about this seventh king or seventh kingdom that was future from John's perspective, so it would have to be after the fall of the Roman Empire, that would be on this level of a head of Satan's kingdom, one of the heads or manifestations of Satan's kingdom. And I believe that this statement that when he should come, he must continue briefly, is really a very important clue, because you know a lot of interpreters have speculated that, well, it would refer to the British Empire that came after the fall of Rome. Some have claimed that it was the Muslim Ottoman Empire. But both of those empires lasted for hundreds of years, and the statement that when he comes, he must continue only briefly seems to rule out those empires. You know, if you look at the criteria, if you look at all these past empires and kings that have reigned, they have certain things in common, and the one is that it's very clear that they are demonic. It's very clear that they are enemies of God and of his people and of his plan. And you can't really say that about the British Empire, which was largely Christian, at least nominally, and the Ottoman Empire, which was fairly friendly to Christians, even though it was a Muslim empire, it was fairly friendly to Christians. It allowed, and to Jews, and it allowed religious worship, even though they didn't have the same status in the Ottoman Empire that the Muslims had. The Jews and Christians were allowed to worship, and were not persecuted terribly under that Muslim rule. And so it doesn't seem to have the same kinds of characteristics that we see of these previous heads of Satan's kingdom. And so I don't believe that this has to do with Islam in any real sense. In my opinion, it's referring to Nazi Germany and Adolf Hitler. He meets all the same common qualifications, if you will, that these previous kings had, in that they were enemies of God. They were, in some sense, demon possessed. Hitler certainly was demon possessed. He was into the occult, and they also mercilessly persecuted God's covenant people. And obviously, you know, what Hitler did to the Jews is you know, unspeakable there as well. So Hitler certainly fits that. And the statement about, you know, him continuing only very briefly. I mean, Hitler really rose to power and became chancellor or the leader of Nazi Germany in 1934. And he died by suicide in 1945. So it was only really about 10 and a half years that Hitler had power. And his whole regime came crashing down because of the Allies' intervention. So that's, in my opinion, that's the seventh king, was Hitler in Nazi Germany. All right, well, that leaves us with the eighth one now. And so let's, it says the eighth is, verse 11 says, and the beast that used to be is not now, also is the eighth, and is from the seven, and is going to destruction. Now, this beast that used to be is not now, and is going to destruction, obviously is a reference to Satan. But again, Satan is the one behind all these kings that have been listed here. All right, so he is the eighth, but he is from the seven. In other words, he is one of the previous seven, but now he has come back to reign again. Now, that could only be, because these kings are humans, that could only be through resurrection. And that should not surprise us. You know, a lot of people would say, that's crazy. The Antichrist is somebody, some ancient king that's been resurrected again. Why not? The very same Christians who might balk at that teach that Elijah the prophet is going to be resurrected in the last days and be one of the two witnesses. So if Elijah, and we believe that John is the other witness, and he would have to be resurrected to be the other witness, so why not the Antichrist? And that explains why in chapter 13, when it talks about the beast rising up out of the sea with seven heads and ten horns, which is the final manifestation of Satan's kingdom under Antichrist, it says that one of its heads received a deadly wound, but the deadly wound was healed, and all the world wondered after the beast because its head had received a deadly wound and it was healed. And so we have the same thing there, right? We have one of the previous heads that has fallen, been wounded to death, and now it's arising again. Well, we have the same thing here, okay? And so, in my opinion, this is Antiochus Epiphanes. Now, if you want to know why I think it's Antiochus Epiphanes as opposed to, you know, Cain or Nimrod or any of the other previous rulers that were of these seven, you need to listen to my series on the book of Daniel, where I get into this in some detail, okay? All right, so now let's get into the next section here, verses 12 through 14. All right, let me read that. It says, and the ten horns which you observed are the 10 kings who have not yet received a kingdom. But they receive authority as kings for 1 hour with the beast. Now, this is an important statement because what it shows is that the 10 horns are 10 kings that reign simultaneously. And these correspond with the 10 toes on Nebuchadnezzar's vision. So let's go back there to Daniel chapter 2 for a moment. And let's read verses 41. You all know that you all know this passage. We've gone over it before. I'm not going to read the whole vision, but or the whole dream, but in verse 41 it says, Daniel's given the interpretation. He says, look at verse 40. He says, for the fourth kingdom shall be as strong as iron. And the fourth kingdom was the Roman Empire. We saw that very clearly. He gives, Nebuchadnezzar was the head of gold. The Persian kingdom was the chest of silver. The Alexander's Greek kingdom was the belly and thighs of bronze. And then the fourth kingdom was the iron legs. And as two legs, which is corresponds to the Eastern and Western Roman empires. But then he says, the fourth kingdom shall be as strong as iron, inasmuch as iron breaks in pieces and shatters everything, and like iron that crushes, that kingdom will break in pieces and crush. And literally it says, will crush everything, not all the others. That's not what the text actually says. Whereas you saw the feet and toes, partly of potter's clay and partly of iron, the kingdom shall be divided, yet the strength of the iron shall be in it, just as you saw the iron mixed with ceramic clay. And as the toes of the feet were partly of iron and partly of clay, so the kingdom shall be partly strong and partly fragile. And now this is talking about the feet and toes, okay, which extend from the legs of iron, the Roman Empire, but are not really the Roman Empire. They're an extension of the Roman Empire. All right, he says, as you saw the iron mixed with ceramic clay, they will mingle with the seed of men, but they will not adhere to one another, just as iron does not mix with clay. Now, this is the important statement, verse 44. And in the days of these kings, now, what does the word these, the pronoun these, what does it refer to? It refers to the 10 toes, okay? In the days of these kings, the 10 toes that are all together on the feet. See, it's not, it. You know, the image, the interpretation of the image started with the head and was moving down, and so that was the sequence. But when you get to the feet and you have 10 toes, those 10 toes are all side by side, right? They're not a sequence. There's not a sequence of 10 kings. There are 10 kings simultaneous. And it says, in the days of these kings, these 10 kings, the God of heaven will set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed. And the kingdom shall not be left to other people. It shall break in pieces and consume all these kingdoms, and it shall stand forever. All right, so that's the kingdom of God that comes when Christ returns. Now, look at, let's go to Daniel chapter 7 for just a moment. let's read verses 7 and 8. In Daniel 7, by the way, he's given a vision of the same kingdoms, sequence of kingdoms that were in Nebuchadnezzar's, that he interpreted for Nebuchadnezzar. And he already interpreted them as to what they were. But here, Daniel has his own personal vision about this. Anyway, he sees the first was like a lion, verse 4. The second was like a bear. That was the first one was Babylon. The second one was Persia. The third one was Alexander the Great and his kingdom. Then he says, verse 7, after this I saw in the night visions, and behold, a fourth beast. This is the Roman Empire. Dreadful and terrible, exceedingly strong. It had huge iron teeth. It was devouring, breaking in pieces, and trampling the residue with its feet. And it was different from all the beasts that were before it, and it had 10 horns. All right, now, the 10 horns that come from the fourth beast are the 10 toes on the feet that come from the legs of iron in Nebuchadnezzar's dream. All right, so I was considering the horns, that is the ten toes or the ten horns on this particular beast, and another little horn, a little one, coming up among them, before whom three of the first horns were plucked out by the roots. And there in this horn were eyes like the eyes of a man, and a mouth speaking pompous words. Now this little horn is the Antichrist in the end times. And notice he comes up after the ten. Now remember, it's while the ten are reigning, that in Nebuchadnezzar's dream, the ten toes, in the days of those kings, the God of heaven will set up a kingdom. So the coming of Christ to establish his kingdom takes place during the reign of the ten kings that are reigning simultaneously. And these are the ten horns, but notice that the little horn, which would be the 11th horn, comes up among them, all right? Before whom three of the first horns were plucked out by the roots. And there in this horn were the eyes of a man. This is the man of sin that Paul describes in 2 Thessalonians chapter 2. And a mouth speaking pompous words. All right, let's go over to verse 19. Let's read 19 and 20. It says, then I wished to know the truth about the fourth beast, which was different from all the others, exceedingly dreadful, with its teeth of iron and its nails of bronze, which devoured broken pieces and trampled the residue with its feet, and the ten horns that were on its head, and the other horn which came up, before which three fell, namely that horn which had eyes and a mouth which spoke pompous words, whose appearance was greater than his fellows. I was watching, and the same horn was making war against the saints and prevailing against them, until the Ancient of Days came and the judgment was made in favor of the saints of the Most High, and the time came for the saints to possess the kingdom. So that's what we read about with the six seals, and you know, the court scene in heaven, and all that stuff is being described there. So the little horn is clearly connected to the end times when Christ sets up his kingdom, but he is reigning in the company of the ten kings, right? All right, now let's go down to verse 24. The ten horns are ten kings who shall arise from, now notice this, from this kingdom. This kingdom. Now the word this, the pronoun this, refers back to the fourth beast, which is the Roman Empire. All right, now this is absolute positive proof that the ten kings, which are the ten horns, the same ones described in Revelation chapter 17, that they are, that they all reign simultaneously, but that they are all coming from the Roman Empire, the remains of the Roman Empire, which is Europe. It's Eastern and Western Europe. All right. So if there's no doubt at all, there's some people who teach that the ten kings are going to be, you know, that the whole earth is going to be divided into ten regions, and there's going to be, you know, the UN is going to put ten different rulers in place and stuff like that. No. This doesn't include Australia. It doesn't include China. It doesn't include the United States. These ten kings are all coming out of the old the old Roman Empire, which is really Eastern and Western Europe primarily, okay? All right, so the ten kings who arise from this kingdom, and then another shall arise after them. He shall be different from the first. Now, from the first ten. How is he different from the first ten? Well, he's different from them in that he does not come out of the fourth beast. He does not come out of the Roman Empire, per se. That is, the Antichrist is not from the Roman Empire. The Antichrist is different from the ten kings that he's going to reign alongside. anyway, verse 23, he shall speak pompous words against the Most High, shall persecute the saints of the Most High, and so forth. All right. And shall intend to change times and law, then the saints shall be given into his hand for a time and times and half a time. That's mentioned again in Revelation 13:7 about the deadly wound that was healed on one of these heads. All right, so all this stuff harmonizes with Daniel. You cannot understand Revelation 17 without understanding Daniel, the fourth beast, which is Rome. There's no doubt about it. It's the old Roman Empire. The ten come out of the old Roman Empire, and the Antichrist then will come up after them. He'll reign alongside of them, or they're going to actually, as we'll see in Revelation, they give their dominion to him and reign with him, but under him. Anyway, let's go back to Revelation chapter 17 and verse 12 again. And the ten horns which you observed are ten kings who have not yet received a kingdom. They will receive authority as kings for 1 hour with the beast. These have one mind and give their power and authority to the beast. These, now it's not just the Antichrist, but it's the ten kings and the Antichrist. These will do battle with the Lamb, and the Lamb will defeat them, because he is master of masters and king of kings. All right, so we'll see in chapter 19, this battle is described in much greater detail. But it says, these have one mind, they give their power and authority to the beast. Now, so where we are in history, you know, with the seventh king, Hitler and Nazi Germany has come. It's only continued a short while, and now we should be seeing the ten kings arising to power very shortly. Now, if you've been watching the news much in the last quite a few months, but maybe even a few years now, you see that Europe is in upheaval right now. Europe is changing dramatically. And it's under a great deal of pressure right now. It's about to explode. It's like a powder keg. And things are going to change dramatically in Europe. The European Union is really falling apart. It's crumbling. You've got, you know, the whole Brexit thing going on, and there's a lot of other stuff going on there as well. But keep your eye on Europe. But not only Western Europe, but Eastern Europe as well. Okay, because that was all part of the old Roman Empire, the two legs of iron. You're going to see, within the next several years, we are going to see Europe going through this turmoil, and the end result is going to be these ten kings having their own individual dominion, so it's not going to be the EU anymore. They're going to have their own dominion, and then once they are all, these ten kings are then reigning over their dominions, we're going to then eventually see the Antichrist come to power. This is all really starting to happen right before our very eyes, okay? All right, so he says, these have one mind, they give their power and authority to the beast. These do battle with the Lamb will defeat them, because he is master of masters and king of kings. And those who are with him are the called, the chosen, and the faithful. Now, no, this is an interesting statement, because when he says those who are with him, he means those who are with him at his coming, when he destroys or he battles with them. What that means then, essentially, is that the gathering of the elect is just before that final battle of Armageddon. All right, we're gathered together to meet the Lord in the air at his coming, at his arrival. And so by being gathered together to meet him in the air, we therefore are really, we'll be eyewitnesses of the battle below, as we're gathered in the air by the angels, right? To observe that. All right, then he says, verse 15, and he says to me, the waters which you saw where the prostitute is sitting are peoples and throngs and nations and languages. So he's giving another interpretation of the, I mean, it says that the woman was seated on many waters. All right, so she had control over, now again, we're switching back to the identity of the woman here, as opposed to the ten kings or Satan himself. All right, so Rome, the Vatican, Roman Catholicism and its hierarchy is the prostitute, and she is sitting on throngs and nations and languages, and she's ruling over many different peoples and languages. Verse 16, also the 10 horns which you observed and the beast, these will hate the prostitute, and having plundered her, will strip her naked and will eat her flesh and will burn her down with fire. For God implanted into their hearts to do his purpose and to be of one purpose and to give their kingdom to the beast until the words of God shall be fulfilled. Now, this statement actually is described for us in the book of Daniel. I want you to go back to Daniel chapter 7 for just a moment. Daniel chapter 7, verse 7. All right, he says, after this I saw in the night visions, and behold, the fourth beast, we read this already, but I want to point it out again, dreadful and terrible, exceedingly strong, it had huge iron teeth, it was devouring, breaking in pieces, and trampling the residue with its feet. It was different from the beasts that were before, and it had 10 horns. Okay, this was the Roman Empire. The 10 horns don't sprout until the end. I was considering the horns, and there was another little horn coming up among them, before whom the first three horns were plucked out by the roots. In this horn were the eyes of a man, the mouth speaking pompous words. Okay, the mouth speaking pompous words is the Antichrist. All right, now look at verse 11. Verse 11 is really, really critical to understanding the chronology of the book of Revelation. Look what it says. I watched then because of the sound of the pompous words which the horn was speaking. That is the little horn, the Antichrist. Now, according to Revelation 17, when the Antichrist comes to power, the 10 kings are going to give their dominion to him. That is, they are going to place themselves under his rulership. Okay, so he's going to rule with the 10 kings under him. All right, but the thing that characterizes the Antichrist when he comes to power and when this happens is the pompous words. All right, that he's exalting himself above every god, as it says in Daniel 11, and 2 Thessalonians 2, he's going to enter the temple and take his place in the temple of God, claiming that he is God, and all that, right? So these are the pompous words, but look what happens because of the pompous words. And he begins speaking these words at the moment that he is revealed, that he comes to power and he commits the abomination of desolation. It says, I watched till the beast was slain. Now, what beast? Well, it's the fourth beast that, in this context, is the Roman Empire, the old Roman Empire. All right, so the 10 horns come out of the fourth beast. They come out of the remains of the old Roman Empire. Yet, it says, because of the pompous words of the little horn, the Antichrist, it says, I watched until the beast, that is the fourth beast, the Roman Empire, the remnants of Rome, was slain and its body destroyed and given to the burning flame. Now, what does that mean? The beast, the fourth beast, Rome, is destroyed, its body is destroyed, and it's given to the burning flame. Well, that is a description of the fall of Mystery Babylon, because look what it says back here in Revelation 17. It says, verse 16, also the 10 horns which you observed and the beast, these will hate the prostitute, Rome, and having plundered her, will strip her naked, will eat her flesh, and will burn her down with fire. Now that's the fourth beast, the remnants of old Rome, which has merged into this religious establishment, which is called Mystery Babylon. This is going to be burned down with fire. But look what it says after that. As for the rest of the beasts, they had their dominion taken away, that is by the Antichrist and the 10 kings who are now ruling over the territory that was formerly controlled by Babylon and Persia and Alexander's kingdoms. It's now ruling over that. So they do not have dominion anymore, because the beast is reign, and these 10 kings are now reigning over all of that territory. But it says that the rest of the beast had their dominion taken away, yet their lives were prolonged for a season and a time. Well, what is the season and the time that these other nations are prolonged for, if not the duration of the reign of the Antichrist? That is the last 3.5 years. And it is after that their life is prolonged for a season and a time, that it says, and verse 13, I was watching in the night visions, and behold, one like the Son of Man, coming with the clouds of heaven, and came to the Ancient of Days, and they brought him near before him, and to him was given dominion and glory and a kingdom, that all peoples, nations, and languages should serve him. All right, so it's clear that there is a time gap between when Mystery Babylon is burned with fire, which is Rome, which is the remnants of the fourth beast there in Daniel, and the other kingdoms' lives are, they don't have any dominion, but their nations continue to exist for a short period of time, and that's that last 3.5 years. And this agrees with what we see in the book of Revelation as well. Okay, so the fall of Mystery Babylon is at the midpoint of the tribulation, not at the ending point of the tribulation. Otherwise, that would not allow the time for these lives to be prolonged for a season and a time of these other kingdom nations that are in part of his Daniel's prophecy here. Okay, now finally, we're almost done. Let's look at verse 18 in Revelation chapter 17. It says, and the woman whom you observed is the city, the great one, the one having dominion over the kings of the land. Now, that verse 18 absolutely and certainly identifies the woman as Rome, as the city of Rome. Okay, it's a city. And the reason is because it says the woman you observe is the city, the great one. And then he says the one having dominion, using a present participle. And from John's perspective, that would have to be present, because he's not using the present tense in a vision. He's using the present participle here in telling John the interpretation of the vision from John's perspective, which has to be from John's perspective. Okay, so when he says the woman you observe is the city, the great one, the one having dominion over the kings of the land, the only city that would even remotely fit that qualification, that at in John's day had dominion over the kings of the land, was Rome. Okay, it was absolutely Rome. All right, so that really settles the identity of the woman as being the city of Rome, and it's the city of Rome that's destroyed. The timing of it is the midpoint of the tribulation, when the Antichrist comes to power, when he begins to speak these blasphemous words against the Most High God, and then he and the 10 kings then turn on Rome, and they destroy Rome. And they destroy Rome because of the Vatican and because of the political authority that the Vatican is exercising at the time. And in order for the beast then to take full control, he has to destroy the Vatican and this whole city of Rome. Okay? All right, well, that's it for today. We'll pick up in chapter 18 next time. God bless you. It's been a pleasure being with you.